Conspiracy theories, government deception, and alternative facts. This is the subject of an Epics original docuseries about Watergate. This is Slow Burn. Based on the award-winning podcast, host Leon Neyfakh explores the conspiracies, deception, and the stranger-than-fiction people that set the White House on fire. Watch Slow Burn, starting Sunday, February 16th at 10, 9 central, only on Epics.
Nerdcasters, we're in New Hampshire this week.
Fries, beans, upgrade the fruit. And what kind of toast?
At this classic mid-century looking diner in Manchester, New Hampshire. And being here on the ground, we can answer the most important questions that are coming up in the 2020 presidential election. Like,
Senator Sanders, what did you have for breakfast?
What did Bernie Sanders have for breakfast Thursday morning?
An omelet. Excellent.
We happened to be sitting in the airport diner when Senator Sanders and his wife Jane came in on Thursday morning and beelined for a booth in the back in the corner.
It takes a minute to recognize him because they look so different in real life than they do on TV. He's taller than I thought he would be.
That was Carmel Anders.
Very nice guy. Wanted to be left alone to eat his breakfast. I get it. You know, you always in this showcase all the time. Then when I realized it was, I snuck a picture of him when he wasn't looking, and then I took a picture with him.
She's a server at the airport diner.
We met all the ones that are campaigning now. They've all come in.
And as such, she's seen just about everyone in politics come through here at one point or another.
We pretty much had them all.
Ivanka Trump.
She sat at table 24. She made me nervous, but she's really tall and very pretty and very nice person. She actually gave me her phone to take a picture with, and I was really nervous, and she was really nice.
Tulsi Gabbard.
She actually came out and actually talked to the servers, where a lot of them didn't do that. A lot of them, like, were more focused on the guests than the servers. And it takes somebody special, I think, to actually recognize I am a worker, where you are at, and they actually recognized us.
And before seeing Bernie Sanders on Thursday, Carmel had seen plenty of him on TV in New Hampshire. These ads that are running constantly here. The one that stuck in her mind was one about equal pay for women. No more 80 cents on the dollar.
Women do not need 80 cents on the dollar. They need the whole damn dollar.
I say, go get me that dollar, Bernie. Go get me that dollar.
Seeing all these people coming through, the ads, all this political activity, Carmel's very interested in what's going to happen next Tuesday in the New Hampshire primary, and she has a say in it.
I'm really rooting for Bernie. I am. Or Pete Buttigieg. She's good, too.
And that really mirrors what we're seeing in the polls in New Hampshire right now. Bernie Sanders on top, favored in his neighboring state. Pete Buttigieg coming up strong. We're recording this on Thursday, February 6th. That's 3 days after the Iowa caucuses, which have not yet been called. But Bernie Sanders and Pete Buttigieg have both declared victory. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We've got Politico national political reporter Holly Otterbein, who covers the Sanders campaign, here with us, for once, outside the friendly confines of Politico World Headquarters in Roslyn, Virginia.
Great to see you, too.
And we're recording this in a Holiday Inn about a mile from the Manchester, New Hampshire airport. Scenic views of snow.
My favorite restaurant, McDonald's.
Yeah. And you just returned from a press conference with Bernie Sanders.
Yes. Bernie Sanders in his Manchester, New Hampshire campaign headquarters just declared victory. And he
did. Iowa.
In Iowa, yes. Sorry, not in New Hampshire. And he did that by saying that he won the popular vote on both the first and second alignment. He acknowledged that it's still unclear whether he or Pete Buttigieg will end with more state delegate equivalents. The full results of Iowa have still not come out yet. What are we on, day four? Takes 4 days plus to count that for some reason. And so he's doing that even though, you know, the way that the AP is calling the race is by state delegate equivalents.
And the way we're calling it.
And the way Politico is calling it. And it is far too close to call at this point.
Way too close to call. Well, Holly, let's back up then all the way. Let's leave New Hampshire for a second and back up into Iowa.
Do we have to
go
Monday
back? Night, we have to go back. The all-important Iowa caucuses, and you know, everyone listening knows what happened at this point, which is that we don't really know what happened. There was an app. There was trouble entering the vote totals in the app. There were long wait times to call them in manually on the phone lines. It's a mess. Democratic National Committee just announced that there's going to be a re-canvass of the Iowa results to make sure that everything about it is has been counted properly. And meanwhile, the result of all this is that, you know, you had Bernie Sanders declaring victory at a press conference here and feeling that he was denied a big moment on Monday night. Still gave a speech, but you were on his campaign plane from Iowa to New Hampshire and wrote a story kind of describing this confused, irritated mood on board.
Yeah. So I went into this thinking that I would write a colorful piece about the caucus night party, victory party for Bernie Sanders. I thought it was likely that he would win, at least win the popular vote, and then likely declare victory because his campaign had been signaling that that's what he would do, if not win the state delegate of Cleveland as well. And so, you know, that's what I thought I was going to do going in. And then we get there and, you know, it's not too long before people are checking their phones. The mood is sort of tense. Then we get word that there's something wrong. This app that the Iowa Democratic Party was supposed to use to count the results had failed. And, you know, people are getting this news, you know, in the crowd, the hundreds of people, his supporters that had shown up to celebrate, you know, they're getting this news, they're hearing it from people. And it was just a very strange mood because, you know, I mean, I thought, a lot of people in that room thought that they might be there experiencing, you know, a pretty historic night. And when Sanders' aides and allies were thinking about it, you know, they thought that, you know, if he were to win that night, you know, he'd be delivering a primetime victory speech, raising millions of dollars from small dollar donors, right? Because they would just be ecstatic off of this high of winning. And really, I think they felt like, you know, they would be able to like prove all of the elites wrong that had told them that they couldn't win. And they were all looking forward to that. And so, you know, it soon became apparent that was not going to happen. And so the energy was just like very anticlimactic, intense. And it wasn't like people weren't like getting angry or anything, but it was very weird. And everyone's just sort of waiting. And so he gives a speech, doesn't declare victory, just it's sort of his typical stump speech, makes a joke about how like we'll figure out what the results of the Iowa caucuses are at some point. And then he leaves. And then his campaign co-chair, Nina Turner, comes up on stage and says, you know, if we get more results, he'll come out later tonight. And that didn't happen. And people just kept speaking like it's a rally or something. Maureen Dowd from the New York Times is like milling around. These foreign journalists are there too. Like it was an extremely strange scene. And then eventually, you know, they said, all right, go home.
That was 3 days ago.
And that was somehow 3 days ago. And then about 9 hours later, we were getting on a chartered plane with him from Iowa to New Hampshire. And you know, it was delayed for one thing. All of us are really like bleary-eyed and tired, and like so are the Sanders aides. So basically, instead of like basking in victory, which I think would have happened even if he had just won the popular vote, right? I think that was their plan.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, some of our colleagues had stories for weeks leading up to this about how the setup of the Iowa caucuses was laying the groundwork for multiple candidates to claim victory.
Yep.
So he easily could have done that. But I don't think anyone imagined that multiple candidates would be claiming victories like having to wait days to do it.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, and so instead of basking in victory, you know, they were basically consoling their aides and supporters. And Sanders himself did it too. I mean, on the plane, he spoke with the press. And one of the first things he said was, you know, he thanked his volunteers for knocking on hundreds of thousands of doors, he said. I think that was him trying to console his supporters who, you know, in some cases, I think were really freaking out.
Nerdcast will be right back after this short break.
Get ready to experience a story you probably haven't heard. A story about what it was like to live through the greatest political scandal of the 20th century. The bizarre and twisted story behind Watergate. Coming to Epics is the new original docuseries, Slow Burn. Based on the award-winning podcast, host Leon Neyfakh explores the conspiracy theories, government deception, and stranger-than-fiction characters that set Nixon's White House on fire. Watch Slow Burn starting Sunday, February 16th at 10/9 Central, only on Epics.
What's the campaign been up to? What have the other campaigns been up to? roaring into New Hampshire under this under these kind of weird circumstances.
So Sanders had a rally later that day. He always likes to pack in events as many as possible. He actually had a State of the Union response to President Trump's speech later that night, like around 10:30. And, you know, in both cases, he mostly gave his standard stump speech because that's what he does. And then he actually had to fly back to Washington, D.C. to vote to convict President Trump. You know, this has been a part of strange part of the campaign as well, is that in these, you know, last few weeks, many of the leading candidates who were in the Senate had to fly back to D.C. to participate in the impeachment trial. And he did a town hall. And, you know, the first thing when I walked in, a woman asked me was, "What's going on with Iowa? Can you tell us? Is the vote
everyone wants
complete?"
To know.
I mean, you know, I was like, I think a lot of voters out there are totally confused by all of this.
And so, you know, we've seen obviously, you know, Pete Buttigieg has been going around the state, Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, everyone's kind of packed in, especially everyone's really kind of centered around Manchester. It's the biggest city in the state. That's where the debate is happening on Friday night. When I pulled into the hotel yesterday, Deval Patrick's campaign bus was parked out front.
I saw that.
We caught Sanders in the diner downstairs this morning. That was interesting. So yeah, everyone's really, you can feel the energy of it. But I want to talk to you about, you know, we obviously don't have the final results, but we know, so we know Buttigieg and Sanders were kind of fighting first and second in Iowa. We know that Elizabeth Warren finished third. We know that Joe Biden finished fourth.
Yeah.
Surprising, you know, according to the pre-election polls, although there's kind of some evidence since then that maybe this should have been a little more expected. But what I want to ask is, the debate we mentioned is coming up on Friday. Do you think those results that finish in Iowa is going to change Bernie Sanders' approach during the debate? And I ask this because to the extent that he's really engaged with other candidates recently, at least in these debates, it's been largely Joe Biden.
Correct.
So far. And I wonder if Buttigieg now becomes more of a target.
It's a good question. I think that although Buttigieg is probably his closest rival right now in New Hampshire, Sanders is leading the polls in New Hampshire, but not by a ton. And Buttigieg is probably seen as the biggest competitor right now here in the state. I think beyond that, the Sanders campaign sees Joe Biden as the ultimate rival, right? I mean, Buttigieg so far, and this could change, particularly after he's gotten this bounce from his Iowa results, but so far he just has not gotten any traction with Black voters,
yep.
Which will... And Latino voters, really, for that matter. And so, you know, that is going to have an immediate impact in a few weeks in Nevada and South Carolina if it doesn't change. Whereas Biden has been the strongest candidate among African-American voters. And Sanders is usually leading with Latinos, but it's pretty close between him and Biden. And so I would be surprised if he targeted Buttigieg. The other thing is that, you know, his campaign does not feel as though they share that much overlap in terms of voters.
That's
right,
a great
now
point. So it's more, you know, there's kind of demographic similarities with Biden supporters,
exactly.
And there's ideological similarities with Warren supporters.
That's exactly right. Yeah, with Biden supporters, working class supporters, with Warren, of course, liberal progressive supporters. So I would be surprised if he went after him. Now, if Buttigieg went after Sanders, which he's been telegraphing, you know, he's been doing this week, he's been calling him out by name,
mm-hmm.
I think Sanders will respond. But I think that it'll probably stick to script. And Biden has also been telegraphing that he's going to go after Sanders in the debate.
Yeah.
Tuesday or Wednesday, Joe Biden called him out by name on the campaign trail. So I would expect the contrast to continue to be with Biden. And I think the campaign sees Biden as a good contrast to them in general. You know, it's like establishment figure versus anti-establishment, moderate versus progressive. That's the sort of story that they want to tell.
Got it. Well, that's the story we'll be looking for in the debate on Friday. Holly, thanks for taking the time out to talk to us.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, that's our show. And we've got a debate night special on tap for you Friday night as well. The Democratic contenders are going to meet here in Manchester on ABC Friday evening. We're going to get together with a reporter after that debate and break down a moment for you. Our producer on the ground in New Hampshire is Annie Reese. Our senior producer is Jenny Ament. And our executive producer is Irene Noguchi. Our illustrator is Bill Cookman. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please do us a favor and leave a review. It helps new listeners find the show. Thanks, and we'll talk again after the debate.